Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Rays got back to baseball Monday with more than a dozen players taking part in a workout at the Trop. First time they've been together since the shutdown in mid-March. We'll tell you how it went, and you'll hear from Kevin Cash. And the NHL is about to begin Phase 2 of their return-to-play protocol. The ratings are in for the match, Champions for Charity, with Tom Brady, of course, as one of the participants. Best cable golf show ever. And have you watched any of ESPN's latest documentary, Lance, on Lance Armstrong? We'll have our thoughts on that. We have all of that and more on this edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, along with producer Steve Versnick. So, Steve, I thought this was really cathartic for me and probably a lot of people out there to see Tampa Bay Rays baseball players at the Trop running around doing baseball things as baseball players often do. This was good for the soul, wasn't it?
Well, absolutely. And I pointed out to you before the podcast that the last time we did not have baseball on Memorial Day, 1880.
There was barely a Memorial Day by 1880. I mean, when was that created?
That's what, 140 probably years ago?
Yeah. I mean, you're talking right after the Civil War sometime.
Yes.
Some right after baseball began, actually.
Mm-hmm.
After that. Wow. That's so odd. That's so bizarre. Boy, put that in perspective.
But yeah, to see the players at the Trop and getting their first, you know, workouts together, obviously in small groups and social distancing and doing all the safety protocols and that.
Right.
Very good to see and you know, hopeful that baseball and their union is going to get a deal together. And even look like over the weekend, the sides are starting to negotiate on that and starting to come to maybe some financial frameworks, deferring some money to the future. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some, you know, the players really don't want the 50-50 revenue split, but, you know, it looks like, you know, maybe they're making some headway there. So, you know, hopefully they can get through that and obviously the safety protocols too. And maybe we'll have baseball in the next month or two.
The idea is to play sometime in July, I guess, mm-hmm. and the sooner they get these guys back in, the better. I mean, you know, as you can expect, they took a lot of caution. Temperature checks at the door, reading Mark Tompkins' story in the Tampa Bay Times. The coaches wore masks. The players did, too, except when they were actually, you know, working out and throwing and doing things like that. They set up sort of a makeshift weight room in the outfield grass, and they kept their spacing, you know, together 6 feet apart from each other. And so a pretty good turnout, mostly guys that live sort of locally, if you will. And the main thing was, I mean, can you imagine? I mean, these guys have tried the best they can, and we've seen everything from wives throwing batting practice in garages to you name it. I mean, baseball is one of those things that you can go out and you can run and you can, you know, you can stay in a semblance of shape, but it's hard to stay in baseball to keep your skills up, right? And unless you practice baseball, whether that's throwing or hitting, that sort of thing. And so these guys have had to really get creative, maybe more so than basketball, where you can shoot around and things like that. Football is in its off season, so there's mostly this time of year, you know, there's a lot of weight training and running and things like that that you can still do. Those guys have had to scramble to get, you know, to get weight machines and whatnot. And then, of course, you know, Tom Brady calls you at 7 a.m. at Berkeley Prep. You got to show up for that. So they've been able to play at least some football. But these guys haven't done anything. And they would be, I think I saw Steve, where they would be like their 58th, 59th game of the season, somewhere in there at this point.
Yeah, I mean, they were supposed to start, March 26th. So today actually would be 2 months ago the season was supposed to start. So,
yeah, they're about more than a third.
55, 60 games in, that's about right.
Right, and Memorial Day has always been one of those markers, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you start out the first month and no one gets too excited, and then you go along when you get to Memorial Day, and it's like, okay, now all of a sudden these standings are starting to to take shape. And
well, you can look at the bright side, and the Rays haven't lost a game, and it's Memorial Day.
It's true.
And they're still in first place.
They're in first. That's right. They're undefeated. Yeah, it was just weird. And you know, credit the Rays. I mean, the media was not allowed to watch this segment. And look, I mean, there's really not a whole lot to see, right? These guys are doing very little. They're running and playing catch and trying to stay away from each other as much as possible. It's as Cass said, it was baby steps.
I think they were excited just to get back to something that they're normal or used to, given that it was very unusual circumstances, kind of went through a back gate. And certainly were wearing masks and trying to take every precautionary measure possible. They were allowed to play catch, condition run, and then kind of we set up like a makeshift gym where they did some plyo work, some lightweight stuff. I think it'll continue to evolve as we go kind of day to day, or right now Monday, Wednesday, Friday, get through this week, and then, you know, maybe we'll have some discussions and see what kind of guidance we're getting from MLB. If they are eager and ready to go, I think there's still a lot that has to be figured out, sorted through between the safety protocols, reentry protocols, and certainly an agreement between MLB and the players. But a lot of people are working really, really hard to try to accomplish all those things in a pretty condensed time frame. There's a sense of urgency for everybody just to play. This is our livelihood, the players' livelihood, and they want to do everything for the most part that they can to put a product on the field that can be seen most likely through a TV screen or a computer screen for the time being, that can entertain our society. And I think, you know, all sports are kind of looking at it that way.
But the Rays were good enough to get Kevin Cash on a Zoom and Austin Meadows on a Zoom. And, you know, that part was good to hear from those guys. And, you know, as Meadows was saying, he said, you know, it's getting harder to sort of find motivation to work out, you know, with in your backyard. I mean, after a while, you realize there's only so much you can do. You need to get back to playing actual baseball.
Today I saw Mikey Perez and Jose Martinez up there, played some catch, did a little bit of workout with DC, did some running, and obviously the main deal now is to try to stay in shape. You know, we're not sure when we'll be back out there, but hopefully soon. And the main thing is keeping our legs under us and staying in shape. But it was good to see new faces. I mean, it's been a while since we got to see each other and hang out and be on a routine. So today was it was good to have that little change of scenery. And it's hard for us right now to find motivation to work out in our backyard or throw with our wives or work out with our dogs per se. You know, it's hard to do all that kind of stuff and find that motivation. So opening up the trap is huge, being able to go there, find routine. And I think what we're doing now, go in, do a warm-up, get some running in, and then some throwing. I think that's all you need right now, especially with what's going on.
Small number of staff was there, and there was a lot of screening questions and things like that. I thought it was interesting, too, in Mark's story, he said that there's a hand-washing station inside the gate. There's sanitizer everywhere, and each pairing of players. So if you were going to play catch, you were given a set of baseballs, and that was it, to use for playing catch. And, you know, and then, all the equipment, you know, was wiped down and things like that after use. You know, so, I mean, and that's, to me, Steve, that's the biggest thing, is that these players are going to have to overcome. Because invariably someone's going to probably, you know, going to get COVID. Somebody's going to get sick. I mean, it's a small percentage of people nationwide overall that are catching the disease. But when you're going to have that many players and that many teams come back and try to play, I think someone in an organization is probably going to catch this. And so if you're a player, you know, you want to make sure that everything is being done, because the health and safety, you know, is the first thing. Now, you know, these are all young men for the most part, not in high risk groups, that sort of thing. But they want to make sure they take, you know, every kind of precaution they can. And, you know, you still have, you know, guys like Blake Snell that has said that, you know, he feels like he might be risking his life by playing. So, you know, that part of it is still daunting for them. So they got to get, they got to get on the field. They got to see the, they got to see the safety measures. They got to feel safe in order to considering, you know, playing the rest of the season or starting their season, it should be. But it was good. I mean, it was like, you know, and here's the other thing that's weird about team sports. And think about baseball now. How many fist bumps, right? Mm-hmm. How many forearm smashes? How many pats on the rear end?
I don't think Willie Adames is going to be allowed to pull off helmets anymore.
No, right. And the big hugs. Remember a year ago, mm-hmm. they would give the big hugs? So all of that, you get a kind of like...
So everybody gets a silent treatment after the home runs?
That's right. It's automatic. Even if it's your first one in the career, in your major league career, no one can get up and high-five you. It's just weird. But that's sort of the world we live in. So, I mean, I think from that standpoint, we're just going to have to get used to what the new normal is. And the new normal is anything but normal. But excited to see those guys back in the trop, and they'll get more players in, I'm sure. I mean, they got a lot of international guys. This is the other part of the process, Steve. I mean, this team that the Rays have, I think they represent 8 or 9 countries on that baseball team. And of course, there's a lot of teams that are much like that, and it's going to take some time. And this is true in hockey as well, that, you know, to get players back stateside.
Well, and with some of the travel restrictions from both the U.S. and Canada, when you talk hockey, and then from overseas, and getting people back. And then if they have to quarantine when they come back, and so part of the long ramp up is just getting everyone back to, you know, their teams or to wherever they're practicing, doing spring training, whatever, it's getting them there and then making sure everyone's safe or quarantined or whatever's agreed upon for each sport and whatever their protocol is.
Right, exactly. And we'll see, eventually what their next steps will be. And they got to come up with an agreement financially, first and foremost. Players and Major League Baseball has to agree to that. The NHL, meanwhile, they're beginning phase two of their return.
Well, they're hoping now, They're hoping to.
They haven't begun it yet, right?
Yeah, I mean, NHL presented a 29-page document of their phase two protocols that they're getting with the players' union and such. It would be no more than 6 players in the team facilities at a time. No on-ice coaching or instruction. But basically, it's getting players on the ice and voluntary workouts to get them skating again, essentially, is the biggest thing that you come, you know. You talk baseball players and trying to replicate and stay in shape. I think hockey's the hardest sport of them all because no one's been on skates. And players will tell you rollerblading is okay for the legs and that, but it's not the same as feeling that ice under you and with the sharp blades and that. So, getting them on the ice, that's a big part of phase two. They're hoping that this will be put into effect pretty quickly. That maybe later this week or early next week, they'll start having voluntary workouts at the facilities.
And the only ones that have been skating are the players rehabbing, right? Guys like Steven Stamkos, they've been allowed to skate.
Yes, and I'm not sure if he's still rehabbing at this point. But, yeah, if you're under rehab, you can. And also, I believe if some of the players that are from Sweden return there, those ice rinks are open. But beyond that, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't wait till they get that going. So you have baseball, you have the protocols being laid out for the NHL. What else went down? The MLS had kind of a threatening memo, didn't they?
Yeah. So apparently the MLS commissioner is not real happy that things are leaking out. Mr. Garber, and he said, so if anything leaks out, you could be fired, fined $1 million, and for disciplinary action for leaking information, and that memo leaked.
Yeah, of course it did. That's what I love about these things. It's like, we've got no more leaking, okay? Anybody that leaks is in major trouble, and then you get a story that says that the MLS has threatened anyone that leaks, and that memo leaks, so... good luck with that. I don't know if that's how that's going to work exactly. We were talked about, on yesterday's podcast, of course, the match, the Champions for Charity with Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods and Peyton Manning and of course, the Tampa Bay Bucks own Tom Brady. That sucker was well-received nationally. And, of course, any live sporting event, you might suspect that, especially one that includes Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson and those two quarterbacks. But how about this? 5.8 million viewers, the most watched golf event in cable TV history, according to TNT. And at a peak time between 5:45 and 6 p.m., which was sort of near, well, not quite the end of the telecast, really, it's kind of midway. The peak was 6.3 million
viewers. That was around when Tom hit that shot.
It was, you're right.
Which could have been a lot of people tweeting, texting, et cetera, about it, and people started turning on the TV.
And got them to the TVs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, got them to the TVs, absolutely. Yep. You know, in reading, you know, John Romano wrote a column about this, and he kind of had a timeline of the events, and I went back and read that and thought back to the event. You know, Brady came out looking really good on this. I mean, if it's possible for a guy, and I think you know, we you know, watch Brady from a distance, obviously, for 20 years and all the Super Bowls and, you know, the Patriot way and sort of the shackles that football team and Bill Belichick sort of puts on his guys. And I said this yesterday in the podcast, how Charles Barkley said he didn't really get a good feel for really who Brady was. We all know Peyton Manning in the commercials, and Brady has done some as well, but you know, Manning just sort of has that deadpan humor. He could be a comedian. He's funny as hell, and he's really good at tossing shade. You know, by the way, how come we never heard this nickname for Peyton Manning? And Brady used it, Pay Dirt. How did that not hook? I mean, all those years, a guy that threw that many touchdown passes, Peyton Manning, Brady's calling him Pay Dirt. That seems like a natural. But I really, going back and looking at all the shade that you know, that Brady kind of took, especially in those first six holes or so, and he looked like anybody right on the golf course. I mean, did not really control his driver, or he didn't even use the driver, but he was spraying the ball all over the place. It was a tough course, but then that one magical moment, that shot on from the seventh fairway that he holed out. I mean, that changed everything for him, and he actually played very, very well the rest of the way. I think he's a 7 or 8 handicap. So for a guy to be, you know, 7, 8, which is really, really good, by the way, I'd take that in a heartbeat. Are you kidding me? I mean, geez. But for a guy to go out there with Tiger Woods and with Phil Mickelson, we talked about them stepping into their arena. But more than his golf, which was exemplary in my opinion. They came back. They took it to the 18th hole. It was just a one-shot victory, you know, for Tiger Woods and for Peyton Manning, who were actually a fairly prohibitive favorites in that thing, and got up, you know, three holes right away. But I really thought, if this is possible, this actually helped Brady's reputation. I think it's better coming out than it was going in.
Well, a couple things. One, he looked human. I mean, yeah. he struggled at
split
the beginning,
his pants.
But then and then the sense of humor to. You know, he splits his pants, and he's even on social media afterwards talking about my pants wanting to social distance themselves. And, you know, that when you can humanize, that's what Peyton Manning has done his whole career.
That's right.
Why he's such a fan favorite, and why ESPN is begging him to do Monday Night Football. And, you know, every network wants him a part of it. It's his personality in that. It's, you know, magnetic. And the ratings for this, to me, aren't surprising. One, because there's nothing else on. But two, you add in the two biggest known golfers, Tiger and Phil.
Right.
And then you add in two of the best quarterbacks of all time, and you add the NFL audience in there that's just begging for any content of NFL. And, you know, those personalities, and it's, you know, a home run as far as that. And you know, but in having them mic'd up in the conversations, it humanized them too, and made them, you know, more like everyday Joes instead of, you know, that's what you do at the golf course too, is you rip the guy next to you and give them a hard time, and that's exactly what they were doing. It was fun to watch.
No, it really was, and they had good chemistry, and obviously the fact that those two have competed so much over the years, and, you know, have been, you know, obviously Peyton Manning, you know, lost an awful lot of big football games to Tom Brady, and he won a couple as well. So their rivalry, and we know what Phil and Tiger's rivalry has been. So I thought that was. You know, that was really a nice pairing. I don't know who they'll get for the next champions for charity, but I think that anybody that watched that and saw how those guys came out of that probably would be game if you have the courage to step up there and actually hit a golf ball with Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. It's certainly worth your while. You know, the a little bit more on this. Tom Brady is going to be, you know, one of the documentaries that will be coming up in 2021. And it's not going to be like The Last Dance for Michael Jordan, although obviously that's sort of the comparison you make, just because Jordan's was a 10-part series and this mm-hmm. is going to be 9-part. And, you know, they're both arguably the greatest to play their sport. Certainly Brady at quarterback has 6 Super Bowl rings, and that's more than Joe Montana and anybody else. So, you know, you're kind of looking at the GOAT and the GOAT. But from what I understand, and Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated had this in his Monday Morning Quarterback story, it's not going to be at all like The Last Dance. In other words, it's not focusing on a season per se. You know, they've accumulated a lot of this footage. You know, we talked a lot about, you know, the Tom versus Time documentary that they did. That's I think you can see on Facebook Live or something like that. And it's you know, a lot of material, a lot of interviews were sort of culled from that experience. And you know, we know that his story hasn't changed. I mean, in as much that, you know, the 20 years in New England, we kind of have lived that. The previous Tom versus Time ended after the loss to the Philadelphia Eagles in that Super Bowl. And then the next year, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that's when he had the comeback against the Atlanta Falcons, the 28-3, the 25-point comeback, I believe the next year. And then, of course, you know, they went on and they beat the Rams again. So there were things that have happened since that first documentary. So you have more material from his producer, and the fact that he was talking about how in this interview with Albert Breer that, you know, Tom really didn't want to be interviewed before the Super Bowl when they did Tom versus Time, because he was very focused and, you know, didn't want the cameras around, that sort of thing. Going into the Atlanta Super Bowl, however, he was not that way. You know, they had been with him a lot. Through with his, you know, with his family, he kind of understood what was going on, and he wanted to talk about his, you know, everything that was going through his mind. And then, of course, we know that he had, you know, authored the best comeback and overtime victory against Atlanta, and he has won another Super Bowl since then. So there'll be a lot of, I mean, it's gonna be, I think it's, you know, if I had to guess, I would say 90% New England, and then it's like, we'll see. I guess they're not going to follow him around with a camera necessarily in Tampa, although you have to imagine at key points they will. But don't get it twisted. They said, we recognize that the Super Bowl is big and that it's in Tampa. And clearly, if he ends up playing in that game, then, you know, certainly that would be even a greater ending and more legacy for him. But they're not going into it thinking that this is about the 2020 season. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? It's like, it's mm-hmm. more about his journey, and his journey does include Tampa, but this is 1 year out of 21.
Yeah. And I expect to see some from Michigan and high school, sure. You know, and we know that story, but they're going to go further in depth with it. They're probably going to talk to a lot more people.
That's the key. They're going to talk to other people, you know, like mm-hmm. Drew Bledsoe, mm-hmm. people like that.
Yeah. And you're going to get more details, much like, you know, mm-hmm. with, you know, what you learned in The Last Dance, a lot of that stuff you knew, but hearing right. from Pippen in depth and Steve Kerr and John Paxson.
That's what made it. Yep.
You know, all those players and some of the opposing players too. I mean, that's, you know, you get further in depth with all that. And that's what makes it compelling.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And then finally, you know, speaking of documentaries, the latest, of course, on ESPN is their newest 30 for 30 entitled Lance, which is about Lance Armstrong. And I had just begun sort of watching the first episode of that on replay. I think you saw a little bit of it last night, maybe?
Yeah, so it's a two-parter. 2 hours was Sunday night, and then 2 hours is coming mm-hmm. Sunday night. So I think it's four okay. hours in total. I'm about an hour and a half into the first episode.
Okay. Well, let me just say this. And there were some things I did not know already, right, about Lance Armstrong, which is weird because certainly we all lived it. I mean, seven Tour de France championships and then the doping and the scandal that followed that. And there's a lot of thoughts you have about Lance. What I didn't know is sort of his history, his background, which is his mom was 17 when she had him. 17 years old, and did not know his biological father, didn't really care to. He wasn't in the picture. Was adopted, I think, when he was 3 years old by a man whose last name was Armstrong, and so that became his name, which is kind of a cool name. I mean, of all, if you listed the names of guys that dominated sports throughout the years, the name Lance Armstrong sounds right. It sounds about right.
You know, it should have been Legstrong, but, you know, yeah, cycling.
Exactly. But. Yeah, that's right. Lance Legstrong would have told you exactly what it was. But it's a cool name. And so he kept it. So he's like, you know, I kind of liked it. And so he kept it. But, you know, the early part of his life, I mean, he was like this phenom, you know, at 15. At one point, he was leading one of the toughest triathlons in the world. You know, the kid started the running phase of it, and was actually ahead. And these grown men were looking at him coming out of the water, going, "Who the hell is this 15-year-old kid doing here?" And even though he didn't win the event, he was the story. He was the story of that event, and he was just an exceptional athlete, almost from the word go. I mean, the guy. When he was born, he was damn near like 10 pounds, you know, and so he was just an A type personality, even at a very, very early age, you know, would push the envelope almost with anything he attempted, you know, and then anyone around him would be sort of you know, sucked into that as well, and they marveled at just, you know, how much of a let's go for it type of guy he was. And that ends up being, of course, part of his story. But, you know, I mean, here he is, you know, when he was, like you said, when he was 20, like his mom was 37. So, I mean, that's incredibly young, you know, kind of a close relationship that they had. But Armstrong, I mean, as it goes along, we're going to find out that, you know, he was such a divisive figure. In my lifetime, I can't think of an athlete who was so dominant. I mean, we've had steroids in baseball, right? Roger Clemens and Alex Rodriguez, and there's a lot of Barry Bonds, Hall of Fame talents, right? That in my mind were Hall of Fame talents before they used performance enhancing drugs. In this instance, I don't know what I mean. Lance Armstrong was, you know, obviously documented pretty amazing, but I don't know what he does without the doping. I don't know. And there was a lot of doping in cycling.
I was going to say the sport was pretty loaded with it. I mean, he was a phenom before that. Now, that's phenom correct. Doesn't mean you're going to be successful, but there was a lot of doping.
You're already better.
That sport. That sport was very dirty and very
extremely.
You know, it was one of those, you know, and they've said it several times in this already, you know, either you're going to do the dope or you're not going to compete.
Or you're going to lose.
Yeah, I mean it was pretty well known throughout that sport that, you know, if you don't do that, you've got no shot.
Right, exactly right. And you know, I mean, a couple of things. He became a bad guy in the sense that, you know, and I remember Rick Riley, who was sucked into his greatness at one time, and then once all this was revealed, felt completely betrayed by him and lied to. But there's an element of Armstrong's story that they're going to get to, which is really disturbing. And that is those who did sort of blow the whistle on him. And even some in cycling that, you know, wanted the truth to be out there. He destroyed a lot of lives. I mean, he lawyered up and he took people down and in some cases ended careers, you know, if you didn't kind of protect him. And in that part, I'm sure, I mean, we'll get to whether there's any remorse for some of the things he did. But at the end, what's interesting about Armstrong is that this meltdown that he has, when the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency charges him, you know, with using and trafficking in these PEDs as part of a major scandal. That's what stripped him of his 7 Tour de France titles and just completely tarnished his legacy. But all of that was almost a turning point in his life. It freed him, right? It sort of cleansed him in a sense that that he could start to feel better about himself and you know, once the world knows your biggest lie. I mean, imagine the pressure of constantly having to be or pretend to be somebody you know you clearly are not, and to scream louder than anyone else who comes at you until you muddy the water so much that some people were like, well, you know, I'm not really sure. And that was sort of his goal. But once it was out there, I think he did kind of have a turning point. And look, there are a lot of things he did, you know, like the Livestrong bracelets, for example. And we know he got testicular cancer. He muses a little bit in this documentary that maybe it was related to his drug use, which is interesting.
Well, they asked him, you may not have seen the clip yet. They asked him, you know, do you think your doping caused the cancer? And he says,
right,
I can't say yes and I can't say no. He goes,
that doesn't know. Yeah.
He says, I know that, you know, the year I did the human growth hormone was the year I got diagnosed with testicular cancer. So
right,
he said, I can't tell you that's what caused it. I can't tell you it hasn't, though. So, I mean, he doesn't know and, you know, hasn't come to grips with it.
But he still has major beef with guys like Floyd Landis, his former teammate that blew the whistle on him. He called him a piece of blank even today. And then, you know, Landis eventually, you know, filed a lawsuit and I think he settled at $5 million instead of the $100 million that he was seeking. This is going to be really interesting, but the interviews themselves, you know, in some ways, I was reading a story about the people that sort of produced this and asked all those questions. It was sort of cathartic, I think, for Armstrong. So I'm going to be interested to see sort of how this series evolves, and I'm just beginning it. You said there are still 2 more hours left of this next week, and so it's going to be fascinating. But man, I mean, can you name someone in a sport more dominant and during his day, right? And we know now, of course, that PEDs mm-hmm. were a big part of that. Lance Armstrong, you know, brought cycling to a point where, I mean, did anybody really follow cycling until Lance Armstrong became so dominant? Not in this country, I don't think.
Not in this country. I mean, you know, Greg LeMond wasn't at that level, and then, you know, Lance took it to another level. I mean, you know, you could say the Maguire Sosa Bonds brought baseball back from.
And that's going to be one of their 30 for 30s, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, but, you know, to sit there and say someone who's as despised as Lance is now for so many things,
mm-hmm.
you know, Barry Bonds still isn't well liked.
That's true. That's true.
You know, the first one that comes to mind, similar to what Lance said, although not nearly to the level, is Ryan Braun.
Yes.
When, you know, he threw the FedEx guy under the bus and got him fired and this, and, you mm-hmm. know, and then later came out, no, it was me. You know, I mean,
yeah,
it wasn't to the level Lance did it, but, you know,
right.
really trying, you know, destroying other people's lives because of.
To cover their own.
To cover what, own you, tracks. You know, what you're hiding in that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's but it's not nearly to the level of Lance, but, you know, that was the first one that came to mind to me.
Yeah. A journalist who used to write for the Orlando Sentinel and then on to the New York Times and was a bestseller. She wrote a book on Lance Armstrong, wrote, I think, maybe a couple of them, but Juliet McCour, who I knew, and we covered a Super Bowl together in Miami years ago. She revisited Lance after writing books that he obviously did not like. And she wrote for the New York Times, wrote stories there as well. It's interesting just to see his evolution, you know, as a person and how he has come to sort of accept this and move forward with his life, even knowing that he's reviled in many circles and what he does with that. But the early part of the documentary that I have watched was fascinating. About just what a phenom this guy was at 15 years old.
Yeah, I didn't realize all that grown-ass
men.
Yeah.
You know?
And because I don't follow, I mean, you know, who follows cycling? Right. Not a lot of people do.
Right, or triathlons and that sort of thing, right?
You know, so the backstory, I mean, you know, we all know Lance Armstrong and what he's done as a professional, sure. But yeah, I did not know a lot of that stuff leading up.
Yeah, so it's good stuff.
Hey, one more thing here, Rick, and just as we're talking, ESPN put out a story. Troy Vincent, the executive vice president of football operations for the NFL, former player,
yes,
talking about the pass interference replay rule. And he says they failed last year. Failed miserably was his quote.
Yeah.
He says, we cannot fail this year. We saw a year ago when the pass interference rule played out, starting with myself that we put in place last year, those outcomes were not good for professional football because we didn't do our proper due diligence. It played out publicly. Mm. The last thing people should be talking about is the way the game is officiated. Officials should be faceless objects managing and facilitating game flow.
Amen to that. Troy's been very honest. He in Peter King's column, Peter used to have Monday Morning Quarterback. Now it's NBC Sports. But I think he talked to Troy, also talked to him about, you know, trying to improve the minority hirings in the NFL and sort of the racial inequality that still exists so many years later. And Troy flat out said, you know, we kind of the same thing. He said, you know, it's been a failure. Like we have not gotten this right. And you know, to have somebody that's refreshingly honest, even though in some cases it's obvious, but I think it's good. I think it's good that people speak truth to power, especially when they work for the power side of things. And so,
well, it's good. The NFL recognizes that what we all saw and knew all year.
Absolutely. That it wasn't working. An abomination. Mm-hmm. No, it was terrible. Even though if you talk to Bruce Arians, and we have, I asked him, would you like to see, you know, this rule remain in place? In other words, you can challenge pass interference for something that is not called. And he said yes. They actually benefited, not early in the year, but late in the year, he started getting some calls. Mm-hmm. And so he still liked the rule. He goes, the problem is that what they called in September, they didn't call in October. Mm-hmm. they put everything in the drawer and said, we're never calling pass interference.
Yeah, early on, it was like, we're not overturning anything.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was just weird. But, you know, so he actually sees the value in it, and it can actually affect the games. But the execution was brutal. And I'm going to be interested, too, to see, and I think this is a good idea, the sky judge, you know, having a guy at each game, you know, making calls in real time instead of waiting for New York or whatever's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could be good. As well as some, you know, some kickoff rules and onside kick and things like that we can get into later. But, so the NFL's got a lot on their plate that they're discussing as they watch Major League Baseball and the NHL and the NBA try to come back and learn the lessons from that. Nothing has changed with the NFL schedule, although I suspect that it won't be too many more weeks if everything goes well with these other sports. Probably by July at some point you might see. And I'm just guessing here. I have no authority to really say this, but you know, we know that training camps are supposed to start on time. At least that's the intention, which is usually the last weekend in July. I think before that, if they can get those guys in there, end of June, early July, to try to make up for some of the offseason, because again, I think it's going to be very difficult for these teams that have new head coaches like Matt Rhule in Carolina and other places and new quarterbacks. To have had no offseason except the virtual training, which they have been doing, and it counts, and it's a way of teaching. There's no doubt about it. But we've talked about how being on the grass and walking through things or running through things is a lot different than any chalkboard or any Zoom meeting can really give you. So I think that's going to be important that they get some of that back. So tomorrow on the podcast, maybe the next 2 days, actually, we're going to have Chris Torello, right, of Spectrum Sports 360 and Bay News 9.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure we'll have our mailbag as well this week, so you can get your questions in anytime. You don't have to wait for our call for that. But if you want to submit a question to us about anything, really, the Bucks, the Rays, the Lightning, you name it, you can always do that by reaching us on Twitter at SportsDayTB. You can send it to me on Twitter at NFL Stroud. Or my email address is rstroud@tampabay.com. Hope you had a great Memorial Day. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.